The Guardian.
Blue Square Bet has a soft spot for all you Football Weekly fans. That's why, for a limited period only, if you join bluesquare.com and bet £25, we'll give you another £25 bet for free. Just text Guardian to 64555, that's 64555, and get your Football Weekly fans offer now. Enough said. Just bet with bluesquare.com.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
The pot rounds up another remarkable weekend in football. Anfield, millions see Liverpool draws thanks to short skirtle, but human drama for City, three at the back. Is it Roberto's cry for help? Swansea and Everton march on. Arsenal season like Swedish phone book full of gunners and nils, while United scrape past cottages, but Rooney goes out with nasty looking gash. Steady. Meantime, Serie A is back and rich club in crisis special. Real Madrid lose, Barcelona wear most grotesque shirt ever, and PSG still without a win after Bordeaux draw with Bordeaux. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Yes, hello everybody. It's a bank holiday in England, but we're in near Earth orbit, so that doesn't matter. Barry Glendenning's here. Hi, Barry.
Hello.
Hi.
Having a nice bank holiday? We're in near Earth orbit and feeling sad because Neil Armstrong is no longer with us.
Yeah, that's true. He's kind of up
our
here with
space
us now,
colleague.
Actually. Yeah.
It's been a bad week for the Armstrongs.
Absolutely. If my name was Stretch, I'd be worried. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
Yes.
Yes.
Good then. All right then. Sorry about that Barney Rone business.
Yeah, how'd you get that wrong?
I don't know.
That's not very close names.
They're not. I think no. There's, you know, Freud would have an idea about that.
What happened?
Well, I got excited about Barney Rone. Not about Jacob not being in the pod, but I somehow misconstrued producer Ben and thought that Barney Rone was in the pod today.
And so I can understand your disappointment when Jacob turned up.
Yeah. No, I think Jacob's an absolutely outstanding performer, and doesn't speak with his mouth full of cocks or pippins. So that's a major plus. So anyway, you just got the wrong end of the stick. Hey, Raphael Honigstein.
Hey, hello.
Hey. Right, that's it for part one.
You didn't mention the Bundesliga in your intro.
That's true, actually, because I had no idea it actually started. Producer Ben said, the Bundesliga started. I said, did it? You know, no, it didn't. And he said, yes, it did. And in actual fact, it has. Very little fanfare for that.
Bayern Munich are already top.
They
with 3 points.
Won 3-0, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
massive fanfare. What are you talking about? It's 50th anniversary. It's the golden jubilee.
It got no coverage in the English media.
In your paper.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So Bayern Munich off to a good start.
They are. Yes.
Good.
They were.
All right. Early days though. Anfield. We all saw the game. Positive stuff for Liverpool, Barry. Skirtle notwithstanding.
Yes, they conceded two sloppy goals, but otherwise, it was very encouraging portent of things to come under Brendan Rodgers. I think a lot of Liverpool fans, not necessarily the more knowledgeable ones, were in a bit of a panic after the gubbing they got from West Brom. But people sort of urged cautions and said it was early doors and not to panic. And yesterday, they tried to play, once again, a short passing game. Got caught out a couple of times and it perhaps contributed to their demise in a game they should have won but didn't, and I was very impressed. Rodgers put out a very young team. I think after Lucas went off with his injury, they had and was replaced by Jonjo Shelvey. Over half the team were age 22 or under, which was quite impressive. Raheem Sterling gave a very good account of himself on his Premier League debut, and if I was a Liverpool fan, I would be very pleased with yesterday's performance, if a little disappointed that they didn't take all 3 points from the champions, who looked strangely lethargic.
Well, you know what? You remember when Man City were dull and pragmatic and winning 1-0? Now all they seem to do is concede goals all over the place. Terrific stuff to watch, eh? Games of Man City.
I don't know. They were just sort of blunt going forward. They weren't really that exciting. No, they conceded goals, but they weren't really contributing much to the game as far as the sort of thrill factor was concerned. It was a very negative lineup, I felt. You know, sometimes you put three at the back and you think, wow, that's great. They have these really attacking full-on flying wing-backs, but of course they've got Milner and Kolarov, who are really auxiliary defenders most of the time.
Right, Milner in place of Silva, intriguingly.
Well, Silva can't play out wide there. He can't run up and down the pitch, I think. They've lost Adam Johnson, and it was a very, very strange... of course, you know, it's the lineup they have worked with and have tried throughout the preseason, but it was still strange to see it used, because you think that with all the... even with the injuries, they have talent. You know, Silva couldn't get into the side. And you think, what is the point of playing that system if you still can't get your best players onto the pitch?
Because it was a cry for help.
I don't know.
Mancini's not waving, he's drowning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I mean, with Jose Mourinho in the past, you know, there was one or two games at Chelsea that you sort of could construe that way, that was seen as a message to the owners. I mean, I'm not sure Mancini would go that far, although it has, of course, been really strange to see this debate being played out publicly, that him saying, you know, we don't have enough players, and I mean, all these things you don't expect at a Premier League club really to happen sort of on the press conference podium. It shows you, I think, just how much resistance there is at board level against, you know, spending big on new players. Very, very interesting. The other thing with the three at the back is, you know, a lot of people saying, yeah, well, they do so well in Italy. But I think you would agree with me that most of the really good sides, it's more of a hybrid system. They have three when they go forward because they push the best wide player up into midfield. But as soon as they defend, then it is always, not always, but very frequently a back four in one line. Whereas with City, when they defended, it was five at the back. And Liverpool still found room in the middle. So I don't see the point of that formation at all.
Mm. Well, a point is what they got. Liverpool 10 minutes away from what would have been a famous victory. Are they on the verge? A week ago, the narrative was, as you say, they're an utter shambles, got beaten by West Brom. But now, are they actually... Is the narrative they're a team on the cusp of greatness?
No.
God, come on, Jacob.
What, on the cusp of greatness?
Yeah, Joe Allen... Word. Played brilliantly again. Steven Gerrard didn't play terribly this time.
He was very good.
He was okay.
Yeah.
Joe Allen is really promising.
Raheem
looks good. He keeps the ball. He just gets it and he passes it, which is what Liverpool have struggled with over the last few years. I mean, I think they bought Charlie Adam last year maybe to play that role, but it didn't really work out. And Joe Allen, some people said he was overpriced at £15 million, but he's less than
Stuart Downing.
Yeah. So. But he played pretty well. He got the man of the match from Sky. And, you know, he set the tempo for Liverpool. He was really good for Swansea last year alongside Leon Britton. But I think to say on the cusp of greatness is a strong word.
As soon as they integrate Andy Carroll into this side, they are going to fly.
Yeah, they threw him. Yeah, that all went out the window at the end, all the passing. You know, the last 10 minutes when they needed a goal, they brought on the big man. And he actually had quite a good impact. He was really close to getting the winner late on with a header that was cleared off the line. So maybe there is a bit of a future at Anfield for Big Andy.
Cusp of greatness, as I say. Nuri Sahin.
Sahin.
Where's he going to fit into all this?
Well, it was interesting because I think he probably sat there and being not quite sure if he enjoys this or, you know, feels, you know, where will I be in this? Because
what's
Joe
his
Allen,
position?
Well, he's a central midfielder who's a ball player, very much in a sort of Arteta mould. So he has to play him centrally. He can't. Doesn't really work behind the striker. It usually works best when there's one more defensive guy next to him, or possibly two, in a three midfield. So he would do the kind of stuff that Joe Allen did really brilliantly yesterday.
Maybe he can play instead of Gerrard.
Possibly.
I think Liverpool need to maybe admit as well that they have a problem in goal. Because he was appalling for that first goal, Pepe Reina. And I think that he's got a reputation he doesn't really deserve over the last few years. You can always rely on him for a clanger. And when
Jacob,
he does as well,
I'm not sure about this.
And when he does, it's really horrendous.
Have you got a death wish?
Yes.
Let's get back on agenda and say, well done, Brendan Rodgers, eh? He didn't have a pop at his player in what must have been a crushing disappointment. He still found the time to put his arm around Paul Martin's girdle and accentuate the positives. We're learning, he said. I don't want to blame anyone. It's all part of our learning curve. Brendan Rodgers, Raphael.
The interesting thing that I've heard from talking to someone who's at Swansea said that not only is a really, really good coach in terms of what he brings tactically to the players and the training is very exciting and interesting, but he's just a fantastic motivator and has a very good way of communicating his ideas to the players and makes them, in the words of this guy, makes them all feel really tall. And I think if you can combine those two worlds of management, then you're a winner.
Do you think he's got that from Mourinho, working as Mourinho?
It wouldn't have hurt, because, of course, you know, Mourinho did have that quality to make the players believe that they're absolute superstars.
Mm. Excellent. All right, then. Also on Sunday, but rather less goal-tastically, Stoke-Arsenal. Arsene Wenger afterwards, there's something missing.
Robin van Persie.
Well, actually, his other forwards are the ones that... Yeah. But
team sells as best striker and fails to score two matches in quick succession.
Is that too easy, or is it actually, it's that simple, is it?
If it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, you know, it's probably a lion in Essex.
All right.
But that is a very simplistic view of it, but not scoring in the opening two games of the season is not a great way to appease fans who are already frustrated and getting fed up. Stoke, you know, we all know they're obdurate and difficult to beat, and they at least had the ball in the net yesterday, albeit a goal that was ruled out correctly for offside. But I'd be concerned if I was an Arsenal fan, but it's, you know, it's too early to panic about things.
Right, 40 shots so far this season for Arsenal, no goals whatsoever. Still, this time last year they were getting beaten 8-2 by Man United. And Raphael, I know you take a more positive view of their performance at the Britannia.
Well, it's maybe because I saw them at the Emirates, where I thought they were very poor, and it looked like a vast improvement, even though the scoreline didn't really reflect that, simply because there was a little bit more coherence, and also they played with a bit more urgency, and they looked like a team in stages. And crucially, I think you look always at that kind of fixture, and you think, you know, Arsenal are just going to be bullied, and they're going to be, you know, put under lots of pressure, and they look very, very solid. And then it wasn't man against boys. They had a kind of muscularity about them, and I liked the way they conducted themselves. Yes, they didn't score, and you see, especially with Podolski, some of the positions he takes up, two, three other players run into the very same space. Diaby likes to go forward. Cassola drops into that room just, you know, between the lines. And so everyone's sort of clogging up that thing. And, of course, it doesn't help when you play with someone like Gervinho, who is so unpredictable, even to himself. You know, I'm sure he doesn't quite know what happens once he receives the ball, which is impossible if you're a striker, you know, looking, should I go short, should I wait? It's, the fine-tuning up front needs to be done. But, you know, as you said, on the positives, they now have a side that can actually defend, and they have two clean sheets.
Worrying, though, that without Van Persie, there's still people clogging things up at the front. Hey, Jacob. Now, there's so much to get through. I'm just going to whistle straight past any other questions about Arsenal, unless there's something really important you want to say. No. Man United Fulham, tell us about this one.
Yeah, for a few minutes, it looked like Man United were going to suffer another defeat. They fell behind early on.
Well, then at the end as well.
Yeah, and Moussa Dembele was just was just absolutely brilliant. The way he was going past people and creating chances, and they were in the end, although he made a mistake for the second goal, for the Vidic own goal, they were indebted to David De Gea for some really good saves. And I think what was interesting was that they left Wayne Rooney on the bench, which is what we said might happen with Van Persie arriving, and the way that he might link up with Shinji Kagawa, who they both got their first goals for the club. Van Persie's was a bit better than
Kagawa's.
Was
it the goal of the weekend? Was it?
Well, there were some very good goals on the weekend. But,
well, it wasn't as good as Osvaldo's, or was it? Have you seen Osvaldo's yet?
I thought Suarez's was pretty. The free kick was a beaut.
But what about Rooney then? Never will they miss him being out for a month, as little as right now?
I think it may be a blessing for Master Wayne to be out right now. He's clearly overweight and unfit, and this was before he got that horrible cut on his leg, and I think was in danger of maybe embarrassing himself a bit. I'm very surprised that he was allowed sort of be in that state at the start of the season. He's clearly carrying a lot of excess poundage. You know, he's, I say this from a position of extreme weakness, he's fond of a beer, he used to be, I don't know if he still is, a heavy smoker. And he's getting up to the stage where that kind of stuff is going to catch up with him if he doesn't start looking after himself a bit better.
Right.
The worry is, of course, that it'll take more than a month. I think they've already sort of quietly revised the figure to 2 months, because the cut went all the way into the muscle, apparently.
It looked horrible, didn't it? Does this mean that Dimitar Berbatov won't make his bid for freedom?
Maybe. I don't know.
All right, thanks, yeah. Jacob. anything else you want to pitch in on? Just a shout. Chelsea on top of the table. Chelsea, eh, Rafa?
Yeah. They surprised me, actually, the way they've started. I mean, of course, it helps if you play an extra game.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, top the table. But no, they've played really well. Hazard looks brilliant. Torres has flashes of the old Torres, although sort of the goals tend to kind of gloss over the fact that he hasn't actually played that well in all these games.
Do you not think? No?
No, not from what I've seen. But, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, he's a striker and he scores goals. I never bought this thing that, oh, he doesn't score, but he's so brilliant for the team. I think it's over the other round. You know, if you score a lot of goals, it doesn't really matter if you then misplace a few passes or look a little bit lost in other stages.
I was at this game.
Oh, Barry.
And Shawnee Ingle was there too.
All right then.
Interesting story.
What did you get up to then?
We just sat in chairs and watched people play football. But
the buffet was good, wasn't it?
Didn't get near a buffet.
Did you not? No. It's top buffet, isn't it, Raphael?
That's good.
Stamford Bridge.
Yep. No, we were in the cheap seats.
How cheap were these cheap seats?
Free.
All right then. Now, anyway, and what happened on the field?
Well, interesting. I was slightly concerned the game might be abandoned because of the torrential rain and thunder and lightning before the game. The weather was so bad that some of the visiting Newcastle fans were even wearing shirts. and myself and my lady friend were in we had to take shelter in a pub of all places, which was terrible. And the rain was so bad, there was at one point I counted 8 buckets out collecting water from various leaks in the roof of this public
house.
In this
pub, right.
Yeah. Then we got to the game. Luckily, the weather stopped raining eventually. And, it was a decent, entertaining game. But I wasn't that impressed with Newcastle.
Do you think it was a Europa League hangover factor?
No, it's difficult to say. They didn't play terribly badly, but they weren't very creative. They were quite pedestrian and never really looked much of a threat. I don't know if that's because Chelsea were so good or just Newcastle were a bit not really up for it. But it was nice to see Hazard playing in the flesh. I was very impressed with him.
Mm.
And Mata, great. I thought Mikel played well as well. He gets a lot of stick, and some of which he deserves. But I was very impressed with him.
All right. Well, Chelsea so far have beaten Reading, beaten Wigan, beaten this Newcastle in what looked like being their biggest test, scored 8 goals, conceded just 2. But they often do go off on a flyer at the start of the season, and it doesn't always last as long as it might.
Interestingly, or perhaps not, John Terry and Frank Lampard were both sat that one out.
Terry had a neck problem.
Oh, okay. But
I'm not sure what kind of neck problem. But and Lampard,
I don't think they were missed at all, and you know, it's sort of is it maybe a sign their time is coming to a close. I think.
All right then.
I mean, you always get the feeling that David Luiz is only sort of a rick waiting to happen, but I was very impressed with him and Gary Cahill. In the heart of the Chelsea defence.
Excellent news, Barry. Excellent news. Well, they have played an extra game. Right behind them, of course, are Everton and Swansea. We'll be talking about them one after this. Bad listener pod, why did you talk exclusively about Man United's failings and not Everton's tremendous performance? A review there of our review of Everton's remarkable 1-0 win at Goodison Park last Monday. Let's get all effusive about them now then, following this 3-1 win at Villa Park. They're playing some proper football.
Yeah, and it's really strange because it's August and normally you don't expect that from Everton this early in the season. But they've just continued where they left off from last season, and this looked like a proper team. You know, with Jelovic up front, such a great finisher. Fellaini again looked brilliant on the highlights, and that goal from Pienaar to kick things off was a stunner. If they get a few more players in, which I think he wants to do, you know, to bolster the squad, make it a bit more, have more depth? Because he said he's got, I think Moyes said that I've got players who can play in several positions, like Osman, for example, Phil Neville. But if we get too many injuries, then we might fall away. And they have had injuries in the past. That's really what's held them back. But I you don't want to go overboard and say that they could finish in the top four. But if the way they play and, you know, the way that they play against top teams sometimes, there's, if they can maintain that, then they could. And you know, David Moyes, for the money that he's had to spend, I think comfortably the obvious, you know, you'd say Sir Alex Ferguson, the best manager in the league, but for what, relatively, I don't think anyone can touch Moyes.
Well, it was an interesting suggestion afterwards that the difference might be because he gave his team a week off in pre-season training for once, which is a bit strange because it would suggest that before they were just always training too hard at the beginning or just before the season started. Maybe that made a difference. Hard to tell, but
they didn't travel as well.
Yeah,
he said
that.
He said we didn't go to Malaysia and didn't Wenger say the same this summer? I think they didn't have
But this summer they did go.
But he never wants to go, does he?
Yes.
Yeah, and
they went to Nigeria, Arsenal.
Yeah, they never. But whether these long pre-season trips are a bad idea?
Do you think? Do you think they might not help in the build-up to
yeah.
the season?
Yeah.
Well, right. It's like people call for a winter break to.
I call players. For it.
Well, we
right
know why you call.
Half term.
Yeah. But if a winter break was introduced, teams would all bugger off to the on tours, money spinning tours, and that would end up being more tiring or knackering than just playing the games.
All right, but Bad Listener says back to Everton.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm going to upset him now because my sort of main talking point about this game would be the fact that the poor old Villa fans, after last season's season from hell, they're not getting much to cheer about.
I saw Villa at Upton Park last week, and they just were so lightweight. I think that Paul Lambert has such a different job from what it was at Norwich, where there was less pressure. Maybe not so much when they're in League One, less so more, you know, in the Championship. But last season, everything was a bonus. You know, just to finish 17th was what they were aiming for. In the end, they managed to get into the top half of the table, well, around mid table. He goes to Aston Villa, there's just more expectation. But I'm not exactly sure why he's gone there, because he hasn't been given a lot of money to spend, it seems. And doesn't seem there's any prospect of him being given any money. He hasn't been able to make any, you know, standout signings. It's much the same team. And you look at the squad, there's nothing there. There's not really any personality there. There's doesn't seem to be any leadership, no character, no one to drag this team through. And I think they're in huge trouble unless he can really galvanise them, which is, to be fair, is what he did at Norwich when he turned up. They'd lost their first game 7-1.
7-1.
Yeah.
I mean, not to take anything away from Everton, but personally what I took home from that game was the abject performance from Shay Given. I mean, the two goals after Pienaar's screamer, which was admittedly difficult to stop, were just ridiculous goals to concede. I mean, the Fellaini and Jelovic straight through him. I don't know what happened to him.
Well, he was shocking at Euro 2012. I wouldn't say I've always been a critic.
You have, Barry.
I've said
you've always been hard on the boy.
I have been hard on the boy. I've always maintained he isn't as good as he's made out to be by mainly. But I'm now happy that the next time Rafa's on News Talk, he'll get pilloried by assorted members of the Church of Given, and he's had a very, very bad start this season. So I don't know why. I have a theory, which apparently I'm not allowed to expound because it could be get me in litigious trouble.
And can I tell you, listeners, it's every bit as exciting as it sounds. Swansea. Cesc Fabregas loves the way they play.
Good for him.
Good for him, eh? Terrific, isn't it? Oh, you know, you were West Ham and bitter about this, aren't you? Rafael.
Really impressive. Especially if you consider that they're in the process of losing their second-best player, arguably, after having already lost Joellen. It doesn't seem to have hurt them. The managerial change, if anything, has galvanised them so far.
Well, imagine being a player and you've got Mickey Lauder. Because sometimes a big player can kind of overshadow or intimidate, or there's that thing with Glenn Hoddle, couldn't get across, you know, why can't you do it like I did it? But Mickey Lauder, he just seems to inspire them.
He does, although I gather his methods are very, very different from those of Brendan Rodgers. You know, we were talking earlier about Rodgers being sort of able to communicate to the players and sort of motivating him. I understand that Laudrup is a lot more distant, a lot more sort of maybe an Italian type manager or a German one, you know, doesn't really talk to the players that much, just gives them his their instructions, etc. And also this training, the training apparently is very, very different, but the end product looks very similar.
It's always dangerous, though, isn't it, when you have a really successful team, a new man comes in, it all continues to go really, really well. But there's sometimes there's a bit of a managerial momentum left over from the...
Is that a danger or a good thing?
Well, it's a danger because sometimes you might think, oh, this is all going swimmingly, and then about 8 weeks in... Spurs, West Brom. 1-1 this. Andre Villas-Boas still struggling to win Premier League matches. Should they be worried? Should he be worried? And well done, West Brom, by the way.
Should he be worried after two games?
Yeah.
Just it's the way it is, always is at Spurs. Yes. They just never get their act together in time for the start of the season.
Okay. Breaking news. Luka Modric has completed his move to Real Madrid. Right. Well, as you were,
shocker.
Jacob.
How much?
I don't know how much.
£27 million, apparently.
Really? Okay, there you go. Anyway.
Question is, who will come in for him? Because we haven't heard... after some initial, you know, suggestion that Shaheen might be part of the deal, we haven't really heard who would be.
They've been linked with this guy from Malaga, Isco, I think it's called. That was what they were saying on yesterday at some point on some television program. But he was quite good, I think, for Malaga in their Champions League.
This bloke,
qualifier. Isco.
Oh, Isco, right? Yeah.
In their Champions League game last week. Mm. And they've been linked with Moutinho as well, but...
Right. Well, they've got the money to spend on him now, haven't they?
Isn't Gylfi Sigurdsson sort of a Modric light?
Is he?
Modric in waiting.
Is he?
More he
of
can
a,
be.
More of a just a goal-scoring midfielder and sort of an energetic than a playmaker that in the style of Modric, I think.
All right. I'm going to move straight on, which I know is going to upset people, but Southampton Wigan, all those empty seats. I was thinking Saints, first game at home, back in the Premier League and all those empty seats. I know they're only playing Wigan, but still...
And Wigan kept a clean sheet away from home for the second time in only, God, must be about 4,000 years, second time in a row.
All right. Okay, there you go. Good stuff. And Norwich QPR. Ooh, Big Banana Feet was a bit upset about our slamming of QPR's big spending policy. He points out number of players signed by QPR in the transfer window so far, 8. Number of those players signed on free transfers, 6. Total fees paid in transfer window, 6.5 million. And of course, there is the question of even though they've arrived on a free, they might still be commanding big wages. But
right,
he
yeah.
says
I mean,
that
how
that
much did I mean that's why Robert Green joined them because right. they pay you know.
Yeah, but we were talking about their wages revenue ratio and how disastrous. Well, he says that those figures are actually skewed. It didn't include the latest TV. TV money figures.
I remember West Ham fans getting very annoyed about journalists criticising their spending around 2007, and they ended up nearly going bust.
Right.
And Portsmouth fans, I think, would have done the same, and they are nearly going bust.
Right. Okay. Anyway.
I was at this game.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You went all the way to Norwich.
Went all the way to Norwich.
What happened there, Jacob?
It was a 1-1 draw, and Norwich should have won.
Oh.
They missed quite a few chances, especially Robert Snodgrass late on, Mr. Sitter, with about 10 minutes to go, and they hit the bar as well late on. QPR, there's no real cohesion there. There's no real style to how they play. They got a bit lucky. They got a bit lucky with the penalty as well. Should have been retaken. We missed the penalty, and then it came out, and Zamora was encroaching about 3 yards into the area and scored the rebound. So Chris Hughton was a bit annoyed about that afterwards. Yeah, but Norwich looked, you know, after their 5-0 defeat against Fulham, there didn't seem to be any real effects from it. And Robert Snodgrass, a very good signing.
Apart from the miss,
but yeah. You know, I don't think they're buying him for his heading ability. They're buying him for what he can do with his trickery and his brilliant left foot.
Dortmund, did they get a win this weekend in the opening weekend of the Bundesliga?
They did indeed against Werder Bremen, 2-1. They needed Mario Götze to come off the bench to score the winner, and people said they were a little bit lucky, but it's a sign of a good team, isn't it? If you get outplayed at stages and still find a way to win, and that's what they did.
Bayern Munich 3-0.
Regulation kind of win against newly promoted Greuther Fürth, who made it difficult.
Who?
Greuther Fürth. First time ever in the Bundesliga.
All right, then.
They play in the Trolley Stadium. used to be the Playmobil Stadium.
No.
True fact.
Oh, love that. The Playmobil Stadium.
Yeah.
And they know Playmobil no longer sponsored.
No, now it's Trolley.
Now it's Trolley.
Yeah.
What do Trolley do? What do they make?
They make sort of knockoffs of Haribo gummy bears.
Oh, nice one.
Bad ones.
I'm loving
They make these little hamburgers. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
Mm. When you used to go to games at the former PlayStation, now Trolley Stadium.
Playmobil.
Playmobil. Do they give you, do you get like little freebies and stuff? This is fantastic. Did you get a Playmobil special?
I never went to that ground, sorry.
Oh, wow.
But another fact for you.
Yep.
Henry Kissinger is from Fürth, and it's his team, and he's seen games of theirs.
All right, then.
So supports them.
All right.
He likes the smell of Bundesliga number one. yeah, but they made it difficult in the first half. Bayern found it difficult to break them down. They didn't have Frank Ribery, but as soon as that first goal was scored, and it was a very ugly one from a corner, sort of a knockdown, one or two bounces in around the box, then they turned out easy winners.
All right. Javi Martinez?
Well, supposedly the deal will go through today on Monday.
Okay.
But we've been there before. We've heard it many times. There's all this business about tax law, Spanish tax law being in conflict with what Bayern are trying to do. In a nutshell, it's fairly interesting, I'd say. In a nutshell, he has a release clause, but Spanish law or football law dictates that the player actually triggers that release clause.
He has to pay himself out.
So Javi Martinez, being very wealthy, doesn't have 40 million euros in the bank.
Right.
Bayern, if they give him 40 million euros, that could be seen as an income and couldn't attract income tax. Ooh. And of course Javi Martinez doesn't want to pay income tax on money that he doesn't keep, because it's going to Athletic Bilbao.
Right.
So the two transfer the sum might end up being something like 50-55 million euros, just a fee.
Wow.
And that's what's been holding it up.
I can imagine how it would. That's crazy. Anyway, Serie A. Cassano had a brilliant start at Inter. They won 3-0 at Pescara. Napoli, even more impressively, a 3-0 win for them away in Palermo. Your friend Edison Cavani scoring, but not celebrating because that's his former club. Juve beat Parma 2-0. Controversial second goal, but it was ruled offside correctly by, new addition this in Serie A, the goal line referee, goal line official. Good start.
I saw that actually, and the goal line official got surrounded, or was it that one? I saw a goal line official at some Italian game rule out a goal.
No, this one he ruled in.
Oh, sorry. Well, yeah. But he was surrounded by other players, and who were very upset with him.
Oh.
And it kind of explains the fans behind the goal, obviously upset as well. This explains why these men don't wave flags to draw attention to themselves.
Right.
In the big what is it exactly they do debate.
Yeah, that's raging. Okay. On one side of that debating line, TV pundits. On the other side, the rest of the world. Okay, Roma, a classic Zeman match in their debut. 2-2 at home to Catania, but two absolutely stunning Roma goals. Rafael, tell us about Osvaldo's.
It was great because it was a long hook through ball, and but it was just slightly played behind him. So he could have maybe chested it down, or you know, had a or had it or whatever. But instead, he just basically turned around, adjusted himself, and took it with an overhead kick while he was still running, essentially towards goal. It was great.
Yeah, magnificent stuff. And the second Roma goal from Nico Lopez. Did you see that one? Nice. It was a bit like it was being compared to Gascoigne's against Scotland. Sombreros the defender, and then volleys it in. Classic stuff. No dentist chair, disappointingly, afterwards, though. In other news, Milan got beaten by Samp. Ooh, there's trouble at the Milan.
It looked quite depressing in the San Siro. It was completely empty.
Well, completely empty is a bit strong, Jacob, but it wasn't a big turnout for the... of course, it's August in Milan. Nobody's around, and it's boiling hot, which did explain the somewhat lacklustre temper of the game as well. But Milan, all sorts of problems at the back. Last year, Nesta and Thiago Silva, their central defensive partnership. This year, Bonera and Yepes, and they really looked shabby. Sampdoria got the win, and who was the goal scored by? Costa. And I think there's big problems there, not only because there's been a bit of a war between Galliani and Allegri, the manager. Galliani now heading off to with the fans holding up banners saying 31st of August, we'll wait until then with faith, i.e. you better hurry up and buy someone. He says he's heading off to Madrid to try and get Kaká on loan and possibly Diarra as well. Allegri says thanks, but that's not what we need. We need a striker up front. And they do seem to be at loggerheads, those two. Barry, yeah. That's it. It's over. The Serie A roundup's over. More great stuff next week, though, because Inter take on Roma. Ouch. That's going to be a stonker. PSG, just keep you updated on what big money clubs are doing around Europe. PSG draw again. Yes, again. This time 0-0 at home to Bordeaux. Oh, they were rubbish. They are now 6 points off the top of Ligue 1 after just 3 games. Marseille running away with it. Yep. And this is before Joey Barton gets there. Yep. Good. Marseille won 1-0 at Montpellier. You remember last year Montpellier won the title? They're in the relegation zone now. Crazy, crazy, topsy-turvy world of French football. Right. Speaking of the European game, Liga. Some extraordinary scenes in the Spanish First Division this weekend. Let's hear more about them with that man, Sid Lowe.
Hello, James Richardson. How are you?
I'm very well, Sid. Where are you? You're in Madrid, aren't you?
I'm in Madrid, yeah.
Yeah. Did you go to Getafe on the outskirts of the Spanish capital yesterday?
I did. I was one of the few. It was pretty close to being, I reckon, maybe only a third full, maybe half full, despite the fact that Real Madrid are in town, despite the fact that obviously that's a team from the same city or very nearly the same city. And that was, I think, just another sign of the problem that Spanish football has got. But it was quite interesting. It was quite a good game.
Yeah, clearly. But just on the subject of the tickets, how come the Real Madrid fans didn't pick up the slack?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I think the first one is, well, there's more than a couple, actually. The first one is August and traditionally, yeah, I know, sorry. And the first one is August, and traditionally a lot of people are still away.
Yes.
Ticket prices are very high. It was a 9 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday night, and you know, it is
too
outside
early,
Madrid,
you.
Even though it's Madrid, too early for them. Yeah. And also just I think that just that sense that maybe it's not all that exciting to go to Getafe. Also, you have to look at it not just in terms of why didn't fans turn up to watch Madrid and buy tickets, but the base that every attendance ever has, which of course is season ticket holders, Getafe simply don't have. So you don't have that kind of, right, from a starting point, we're already two-thirds full. That just doesn't happen.
How's their insemination program going? Is that going to...
Well, this is one of the things that I... To take the insemination program and kind of throw it back at Getafe, and, you know, they did this brilliant advert about how they were going to create more Getafe fans by giving them this sex zombie video so they could go to the sperm bank and help produce these great Getafe fans. And actually, to take that joke and take it onto kind of a serious plane, which is, yep, there's a serious argument there, which is let's create some future Getafe fans.
Yes.
That's one of the things that I don't understand about Getafe. They're completely failing to do that. Why aren't they giving tickets to kids? Why aren't they trying to get people in? Why aren't they trying to build a fan base? Even if the ticket prices come down, surely better to have the whole stadium full at a lower price than half a stadium full at a higher price. You might get people buying things at bars, and you might get people becoming fans in the long term.
Don't you think, Sid, that the kids certainly would prefer lesbian sex zombie videos to free tickets?
It depends how old the kids are, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yeah. Sid, last night you sent an email in the middle of that game going, yeah, nothing to see here. Is it all right if I leave my column till Tuesday because I've nothing to write about? How did that work out for you?
Yeah, how did that work out? The great thing about that, I think the email said something like, move along now, nothing to see here, this is dull. And unless Valencia Depor later on throws up something really big, we should wait till Tuesday and we can talk about Atletico Madrid, Atletico Bilbao, which I'm going to tonight. That was 1-0 for Real Madrid. They looked comfortable without looking good. It looked like it was going to be one of those kind of plodding, uneventful 2 or 3-0 victories. Suddenly Real Madrid lost 2-1, which is really, really big.
How did that happen, Sid?
Well, Mourinho after the game said that it happened because they played badly. No excuses. We were horrible. We were unacceptable. And that's why it happened. He said that the mistakes that they made, they conceded the goal from a set play and then got caught on the break. Really nice goal, actually. But Getafe created 3 or 4 half-decent chances in the second half. So, I think Mourinho was right to say it wasn't just that they were unlucky. Madrid did play badly. They were caught on a set play. Mourinho said afterwards, It wasn't about the structure. It wasn't about the work on it. We couldn't work any better on this. But there are individual areas you pay for. Now, a cynic would say Mourinho is trying to push the blame onto individual players rather than push it onto himself. I think he also might have a point that the work is there. If a player then you know screws up a particular element of it, then it's, you know, it's not actually the coach's fault. But then what I think Mourinho did get wrong is he basically threw on all of his forwards. But he had no one to give the ball to the forwards. So there was about five men standing up front and absolutely no one in the middle of the pitch. That's where Madrid got caught on the break as well. They were very, very open. When Getafe did come out, thought Madrid looked vulnerable. They could even have conceded more in the end.
Well, they have 5 points now behind Barca. And you're talking about looking comfortable without looking good. Boy, does that describe Barcelona in what has to be the most revolting football shirt seen for many a season anywhere.
It looked like they were wearing Sunny Light bottles, didn't it? It was absolutely bizarre. It was just horrific. I mean, you can just about get away with it in August, but they're going to look really daft playing in those in February.
Well, somebody was mentioning, what were those T-shirts? Global
Hypercolour, yeah.
Basically, their strip looked like it had red shoulders, which kind of faded into kind of orangey-yellow by the time it reached the midriff.
It was one of those lollipops, one of those lollies.
Like a Solero.
You know, like a, not even Solera, because that's the same colour all the way through. Like
no,
one of those
not.
Kind of rainbow lolly things.
Solera is not the same colour all the way through.
The fruit pastel. Isn't it? Yeah.
No, Solera's got a kind of sorbet middle.
Yeah, but on the outside I'm talking about. On the outside, Solera is uniform on the outside.
Oh, you know, you're talking about like a rainbow
kind of,
or something.
Yeah, like a kind of rainbow lolly. Not quite a fad. Imagine if someone did a fab kit. That would be bloody brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You'd have white shorts, red socks and kind of a hundreds and thousands shirt.
All right, now Barcelona, who are kind of like a byword for footballing star for so many of the disciples all over the world, how could they possibly think that was a good idea? No, I'm serious.
I don't know. I mean, because you'd like to think there's some
sort of... about it.
Well, you'd like to think, no, I'm not surprised now. I mean, I suppose they're not really in a position to do so, but you'd like to think there was a filtering process, wouldn't there?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? That someone comes up with this design, someone else has a look at it and goes, no, I don't really think so. How about we rethink this?
Would this be the first game in the history of football where an opponent wouldn't have wanted Leo Messi's shirt at the end of the game?
I wonder if I can't remember the footage at the very end of the game, because obviously I was at Getafe and kind of catching it out of the corner of my eye on the little screens in the director's box. But I did see someone go up to Victor Valdes, and maybe that was the reason. They all went to the goalkeeper because he was the only one wearing a half-decent shirt.
Yeah. It was a bit of a close call, wasn't it? For a long time, it looked like Barcelona were going to be the big losers this weekend.
Yeah, they were awful, to be honest, Barcelona. Really, really poor. And they also got a bit lucky, and they were 1-0 down from a goal from Joseba Llorente very early on. And I think they scored their first of the two. Messi got them both in around about the 75th, 76th minute, something like that, with a quarter of an hour to go. Then got another one. And the goal came... The goal was a bit of a mess as well. And the referee got in the way of Pachi Puñal, the Osasuna player, preventing him getting to the ball. Barcelona then went up the pitch. Suspicion of offside twice in the build-up to the goal, and Messi finally scored it. It wasn't a good goal. It wasn't a good performance. But when you've got Leo Messi, I suppose you've got something to go for you. I was sitting with a friend in the press area of Getafe last night, and we were talking about this, saying, I wonder how good La Liga would be if Madrid and Barcelona were forced to say, give Messi to Valencia and Cristiano Ronaldo to Sevilla. We might have quite a good league.
Yeah. All right, then. Anything going to happen? Do you think that the transfer window is open until Friday, of course?
Modric has happened this morning. And, of course, the cynics amongst us will go, Real Madrid lose. Immediately they announce signing a very good player. It does look a little bit on the suspicious side, but I think it was already pretty close. Obviously, it was pretty close last night. And what I'm intrigued about is this announcement of a partnership between the two clubs. And those kind of things are always sort of delivered in this sort of slightly opaque sort of way. You never really know exactly what they entail. You would guess, wouldn't you, that this makes it more likely that if Bale ever leaves, it will be to Real Madrid. But then maybe it won't work like that.
Were there fans in pyjamas this weekend in the Liga?
Well, this was the idea at Malaga. It turned out that not many of them did it, but this was the idea. On 11 o'clock on Saturday night, Malaga's fans turning up in pyjamas. Not very many did. I suppose maybe not many of them have pyjamas. I mean, how many people actually wear pyjamas these days?
All right, let's have a quick straw poll here. Barry, pyjamas?
T-shirt and boxers.
Yeah, that counts. Yeah. Yeah, Jacob?
Does that count as pyjamas?
Do you sleep in the Raw? Jacob Steinberg in the Raw?
that's too much information.
You don't wear pyjamas?
No.
Jesus Christ. Raphael, you do, I'm sure. No! Oh, my goodness.
Commando.
That's not right on so many levels.
I would
Ben,
have had...
Ben's got
Why
pyjamas.
Why are you so prude?
Just bottoms, though. Don't you get chilly at night? Oh, I'm pyjamas all over. What about you, Sid?
I have this image of you, Jimbo, in one of those nightshirts with a hat and a tassel.
Yeah, like Groucho Marx in that magnificent film.
Walking around holding a candle.
Yep.
Yeah, and if he had a moustache, you'd have one of those things to press it down to stop it getting scruffed up in the night.
Oh, that sounds good, actually.
One of those Hercule Poirot-style facial things.
Right. Do you wear pyjamas, Sid?
Well, it depends. You just said that T-shirt and boxer shorts count as pyjamas.
Yes.
So I suppose I do. But to take it back to Malaga, fans are asked to turn up in pyjamas. It would look a bit weird if they turned up in boxer shorts and T-shirt. And maybe wouldn't have the same impact. I'd love to see them turn up in full dressing gown, slippers, teddy bear underarm, the whole works.
A pipe.
But why would you sleep in boxer shorts?
Because, you know.
Because I want to sleep in something, but I'm too tight to buy pyjamas.
Freedom. Nah. That's what makes it fun when you take them off, you know. If they're always off, you don't get that little woof. Here's Jimbo.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going
to
leave
Jimbo
you.
Jimbo pretends to be asleep.
To treasure that image.
I'm traumatised now. Yep. I'm just deeply, deeply scarred by this.
All right, well, that's it for today.
Last bit of business. The Secret Footballers book is out and available in all good online Guardian bookshops and other retail outlets.
Any signings at all?
Does he reveal what he wears in bed?
I don't know.
Is it based on a true story?
Right, okay. All right, well, that's it anyway. Sid, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, ours too. Many thanks to Barry Glendinning, to Jacob Steinberg, Raphael Honigstein, and producer Ben. And you, the listener, will be back on Thursday. Have a super time till then. Bye-bye.
Blue Square Bet has a soft spot for all you Football Weekly fans. That's why, for a limited period only, if you join bluesquare.com and bet £25, we'll give you another £25 bet for free. Just text Guardian to 64555. That's 64555 and get your Football Weekly fans offer now. Enough said. Just bet with bluesquare.com.